it's a whole lot different up here than it is down there. You look great, you've all cleaned up. My name is Faye Smith. I'm a very grateful member of this wonderful worldwide fellowship, Al-Anon Alateen. It's the worldwide fellowship.
Amen.
It is an honor to be here and a privilege to be here. I want you, I don't recognize and thank my husband enough. He's back there. He's ready for me to pick on him already. But when I first saw this chapel, I thought, this is, he's going to love speaking here tonight. He likes this kind of arena and up here from the podium. But I want you to meet my husband, Mike. Stand up, hon. I really don't give him enough recognition. I just now, this past December the 31st of 2008, rotated out of, I was a delegate for Al-Anon Panel 46 at the World Service Conference, which indeed is an honor and a privilege to be there. And Michael helped me a great deal. He hauled me around, made sure that I got up on time. Of course, he went back to bed. And slept, and he played golf, and he went to New York, and he went to Connecticut, and had all the fun, and I did all the work. But when I got back home, anytime I was asked to go and share at the districts my report, one of the districts was way up almost in Chicago, Gary, Indiana area, Crown Point. I said, I'll drive. You just get me a GPS, and I'll drive. He said, no, you don't have to do that. I'll take you. And, I don't thank him enough for doing those things for me, because there was a time that was not the case. There's a few things that I feel that I need to tell you. I need to tell you that I do have a home group, and my home group meets in Bloomington, Indiana. It's the Hang In There group. If you're ever in Bloomington, Indiana, that's where the Indiana University is, on a Monday night at 7:15, Hang In There is the name of my group. It's right across from the Bloomington Library. Come and visit. You're more than welcome to be there. I think it's also important that I tell you that when I decided to be willing enough to work the Al-Anon program, it was on June the 25th of 1982. Also, I think it's important that I tell you that I have a sponsor. Now, I don't just say I have a sponsor. I have a sponsor, and I use that sponsor. I don't call her up and share my difficulties with her as I did when I first came in, but I still need her wisdom and suggestions at times, and I also just need to tell her, I'm doing okay. I also feel that it's a responsibility for me to tell you that I sponsor. I sponsor young women. I tell them and teach them how to apply the steps to their life how I was taught. I think it's important that I also tell you that anytime I'm asked to come and share our message of hope, whether it be in my home group, whether it would be at a conference, whether it's at a gathering like this, and congratulations on your 95th, I think that's absolutely wonderful. It's an honor and a privilege to be standing here before you to share my experience, strength, and hope. It's also, I believe, an honor and a privilege when Mike and I are asked to do this together. And I'll tell you why. I don't personally see a lot of men and women, married couples, coming in together and sharing what the program of AA and Al-Anon has done for their life. For me, the 12 steps of the program of Al-Anon saved my life. I also think that the 12 steps of AA saved Mike's life, and I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that from the bottom of my heart, because without that, we wouldn't have had a journey at all, because I thumbed my nose at AA, and I'll get into that a little bit later. We share together a message of hope for the families who still suffer from this terrible, terrible disease of alcoholism. It reminds me of, I heard this joke many years ago, and the joke was, let's say that you're on a commercial airline, and the pilot comes on. Let's say you're going to Florida and you're on AirTran, and the pilot comes on and he says, you know, I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. Well, the bad news is the navigation equipment's kaput. We have absolutely no clue where we're going. But the good news is we're making real good time. And that was me. By God, I was making real good time in my life. I was going here and I was going yonder and I was busy doing this and I was busy doing that and I was controlling people because that's what I knew how to do. And I tell you, I really knew how to do it. And I thought I did a real good job. But you know what? I was so busy doing that I didn't have a chance, didn't take the time to listen, to take care of me. I'm to tell you in a general way what I used to be like, what happened to me and what I'm like today. I was a frightened, skinny little girl growing up. Stringy hair, measurements 12, 12, 12. My mother thought I had TB, and that doesn't mean tired, but she could not keep jeans up on me. And I look at some of the old black and white pictures, and you're right, I have been around a while. Nothing to me. And she, I guess there was something at that time called Geritol, and she gave me Geritol. Boy, I'm telling you, I had plenty of energy. I don't know what was in it, but, and my appetite, I seemed to. What I remember growing up, and there are a lot of my youth I've blocked out, but there are a couple points I want to share with you just to kind of give you a background. I remember probably in the third grade, so that means I was about maybe 8 or 9 years old. There was this young lady that would come to visit me at school. And you know, all I ever wanted when I was growing up, and this just hangs with me, is that I always wanted my mother to tell me that she was proud of me, that she loved me, that I wasn't a mistake, because you see, she wanted a boy, and it's obvious I wasn't a boy. But that never materialized, and when Christy gave her lead last night, which was very touching to me, and she talked about her mother and she talked about her father, I could relate. Anyway, this lady, she'd come and she'd bring crayons and she'd bring coloring books and she'd bring these butterscotch candies. And she made me feel safe. She made me feel comfortable. I felt loved. I don't know why she was at school visiting me, but it's kind of like as she appeared suddenly, she kind of just disappeared suddenly. I didn't know until sometime later that she was a social worker. And evidently back then, they would send social workers to talk to kids who they thought they were having difficulties, they were having problems. And I remember this. I remember my mother saying to me, don't you talk about the family secrets. Don't you talk about what goes on in the house. And then there was kind of like a little bit of fear, uneasiness in my gut. I remember that early, early on. I remember then, I'm going to speed it up a little bit, I was probably about 12, or I was about 13. And evidently that rule did not make enough impression on me that for some reason we were getting involved in this very strict fundamental religion, a lot of rules. And my mother for some reason couldn't go with us on this adventure or this church gathering or whatever, and she said, well, you go in my place. And I knew these ladies, and I evidently said something like, she said, how's school going? And I said something like, well, you know, I've got so much homework to do. I'm tired at night, and I don't have a chance to get my homework done because I had a lot of other duties to do. I had a brother and a sister to take care of, and I had laundry to do and so forth and so on. We got back home, and why this lady said this kind of repeated what I said to my mom, and right away I knew what was going to happen. I knew I was going to be punished. I got, today you probably would call that child abuse. I got a nice beating for that. And I knew right then, don't ever, ever talk about what goes on behind closed doors. Those secrets you keep to yourself. So it's kind of like I had two different personalities. You know, when I was at home, you act one way, and when you leave that house, you better have a smile on your face. You better say, if somebody says, how are things going? They're going just fine. They're going just grand. Well, you know, here in this strict religion, who do you think I met? One of those rules that we had was that if you go to this religion, you have to date within this faith. Well, that's how I met Mike. And I probably was about 16 years old, 16, 17, something like that. But what I noticed about Mike was he was a little bit different than these other guys. It's amazing what we're drawn to, isn't it? He was a little worldly. He was kind of streetwise. He wore tight, pegged pants. Now, that was not Christian-like, see? He listened to rock and roll music. He told lots of jokes, and he made me laugh. And there was that chemistry, right? And then add the icing to that, my mom said, well, you're not going to date that guy. Well, you know what I'm thinking. Don't tell me I'm not going to do something. You know, and it's, we'll go to any lengths to get what we want. And at that time, I don't know if it was lust or what it was, but I went to any lengths. And Mike convinced me, for some reason, I remember him convincing me, we'll be happier if we're together. We'll make each other happy. And you know, I recall when I was growing up, Father Knows Best was a popular TV movie. And I would compare that TV movie with what went on in our home as I was growing up. Already, what are you seeing? Not realistic thinking, fantasy world. I could not separate the fantasy from reality. Because if I dream it, that's how it's going to be. So I thought, okay, this is my knight in shining armor. This is my chance. We're going to set up house. I'm going to have the White House, the picket fence, the green shutters, just like it is in the Doris Day movies, right? Perfect, just perfect. And you know, for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I kind of thought it was perfect. Remember, I kind of thought it was perfect. We're still involved in this fundamental religion, right? And now what do you think I'm doing? I'm comparing Michael with these other fathers in this church. And Mike's not doing what I've asked him to do. He's not making me happy. He's not fulfilling these promises. Because you see, every time Mike picks up a drink, I kind of act out. I kind of react to his actions. And I would say, can't you do it like so-and-so? Can't you be? Can't you act? Can't you do this? If you love us enough, why don't you do it? It's not that hard. I couldn't understand on Friday nights when he would pick up the phone and he would call and he would say, you know, I'm just going to stop for one. I'm just going to stop for one. I've worked hard all week. I'm just going to stop for one. And I was really looking forward to him coming home. Maybe we'd go out to dinner or maybe we'd go to church because that, you know, on Friday nights, that was one of the, seems like we had meetings, gatherings all the time. Well, that one drink would turn into maybe he would come home in the wee hours, or maybe he wouldn't. He might come home in a day or two. And then when he would come home, I would be right there in his face. I can't understand, if you loved us enough, why do you act this way? And you know what I've learned is that that kind of living life can go on for a long, long time. We can live like that. I could live like that for a long, long time. But I didn't, you know, I just knew that it was Mike's behavior. And I thought, if I could change him, if I could control him, how could I change him? Well, you know, I really thought in my own mind, if he could kind of see how it looked like when I drank like he drinks, if I could go out to the cocktail lounges and have a few drinks, and I would wait and come home at 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, surely Mike would realize, that doesn't, I understand what she's saying. I won't drink so much. Now, that's what I thought, so I tried that, right? What I realized when I did that is that put me in situations that a mother and a wife should not be put in. And I realized something else, that I started to abuse alcohol. Now, notice I say abuse alcohol. I didn't know that terminology back then. I just thought, you know, I'm doing exactly what he's doing. And when I went out and I acted out like that and I came home, it only made matters worse when I mixed the booze and I mixed the pills together. And we would play head games. I remember when we lived in Broad Ripple, I had worked with this lady, and her and I at lunchtime would go out sometimes. And back then, there was happy hour. And we would have a few drinks at lunchtime, and we'd go back to work. And then after work, we'd go out to the bars, and we'd have a few drinks. And Michael would come in. He'd see my car. And I never went to the blue-collar taverns like Michael did. I never could understand why he would go out and drink at these blue-collar taverns. I mean, they were dirty, they stunk, they were dark. I thought, well, at least why wouldn't he pick what I called the cocktail lounges? So he's this particular one that I frequented quite a bit, trying to get his attention. He stood out in the lobby area, got on the phone, called. He knew the bartender as I did, and he said, is Faye Smith there? Well, you know how they do. They cover the phone. Faye, are you here? No, I'm not here. He hangs up the phone. He comes in. He says, so you're not here, huh? And he'd turn around and he would leave. And then by the time I got home, I would be in his face or he'd be in my face, and we'd have a pushing and a shoving match. So the physical altercations would start, and the verbal, and the things that we would say to one another. You can just imagine. I'm sure none of you have ever done that, though. When I say that alcoholism tears families apart, and there's no doubt in my mind that alcoholism is a family disease. It absolutely tears them apart. Because you see, shortly after Mike and I got married, I think it was maybe 13 months, 14 months, we had a little girl, our little girl, Michelle, our only little girl. And of course, she saw her mother and her father at our very worst. Police were starting to come to the home, and you know, police are not very quiet when they come to the home, and they would ask Mike to leave for the night. He'd come home, and he'd say, you know, Faye, I'm really sorry. And you know, I wanted to believe that he was really sorry. I wanted to believe that he was really sorry. So he would say to me, you know, instead of next Friday night going out after work for a drink or two, I promise I'll come home and I'll take you and Michelle out to dinner. And I'd get all excited. I might go out and buy a new dress, and I'd make reservations and get Michelle all dressed up. And we'd go out to a nice restaurant, a really nice restaurant. You know, kind of like they show in the Doris Day movies, white linen tablecloths, candlelight. I'm sitting there with a wine glass in my hand. Michelle has a Shirley Temple. I look over at Mike, and he might have three or four drinks in front of him. Something's not right with this picture. Next thing I know, something happens. Either we're escorted out of this restaurant, or we're asked to leave, or he says, we're leaving. And we grab Michelle and we leave. And I'm like this all the way home, you know, and we're back and we're forth. And I ask myself, what happened? What did I do wrong? What did I say wrong? You know, and I'm thinking now, I'm reading every book possible. I must not be skinny enough. I must not be smart enough. I must not be sexy enough. So I go out and I buy Cosmopolitan. You know, I read about all the things that you should do to be a good wife. And I try all these things and nothing works. And I can't figure it out. Nothing works. And now, you know, now we're getting
We're getting more and more violent in our debates. We've got bullet holes in the wall. We've got broken furniture. We have blood on the wall. How does this happen? How did it get this far? This lady says to me, she says, the one that I used to go out with, I hadn't seen her for a while. All of a sudden, I see her in the, I switch jobs, and I see her in the lobby of this office building. And I said, Dottie, how are you doing? She said, Faye, how are you doing? I said, great. Let's go out to lunch. She said, okay, so go out to lunch, and here I order a glass of wine. Now, back then, you know, they really didn't care if you really drank on the job, just don't get caught. And she didn't get anything. She didn't get anything to drink, and I thought, well, that was, you know, I didn't ask her, I just thought that was strange. So then we kind of talked about our life, and more, my life is getting worse, and hers is getting better. But I don't know much about, you know, she doesn't share a whole lot, other than life's better. She's remarried, she's moved, they got a nice house. And so I said, well, you want to go out to the Cork and Cleaver after work? This is where, this is that cocktail lounge I talked about earlier. And she said, I'll go out afterwards. So we go out, and she orders coffee. And I start talking about what goes on, you know, like you do with close friends, what's going on at home. And she says, hey, you know what? I think maybe there's a drinking problem. You think Mike has a drink? No, I have a drinking problem. Well, I'd like for you to come to, because I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, where? I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. She said, but I'd like for you just to come. You might relate, you may not, but at least come, because it's an open meeting. So I went, and I heard this lady, and her name was Dottie, too. Wasn't the same Dottie, another Dottie. She started sharing her story, and you know what I thought right away? Oh, my God, that's me. That's me. You know, and I remember when I was a kid growing up, God was going to get me because, you know, I was bad. And that I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd get on my knees and I'd pray because I thought, oh my God, I forgot to say my prayers, he's going to get me. And I thought, oh, this is how he got me. But what I realized when I continued to listen to her, that maybe I was abusing it, which later I found out that I really was abusing it. I had too much of a control, which I touch on a little bit later. But anyway, what I did is, after the meeting, just like so many other meetings, You go out for coffee. But before, I grabbed all your free literature. Well, you know what I was going to do with that literature, don't you? I was going to, I was going to take it home, and I would just kind of plant it wherever he might find it and read it and do something about it. It should be that simple, what I thought. So anyway, we went to coffee. And this one man, young man, I've never seen him since. He wasn't a member of AA. He was a member of this program called Al-Anon. And he looked at me, and now by this time, I'm not only full of anger and resentment, my eyes are swollen from crying, which I'm very emotional. I hope to stay very calm today. He said, lady, I want you to know that you can't get your husband sober. I thought, you know, he has a lot of gall. He didn't even know me. But there is a program for you. You can go to Al-Anon. I remember him saying that. I cannot tell you from this podium what I said to that young man. Because again, I thought, how dare him? He doesn't even know me. And we're not here about me anyway. We're here about this alcoholic. I didn't call him an alcoholic. We're here about this man I'm married to that he just drinks too much. And I just want to get him, I want to fix him. I want to stop. I want your free recipe to take home, just to fix him, and everything would be fine. So for 4 years, you know, for 4 years, I knew I was going to, it took me 4 years, six thinking. Well, since I left that meeting and I planted that literature and it didn't work, Mike said, you know, I think what the problem is, we need to move. We need to have a home built up north in Westfield, Indiana, just about 7 miles north of Carmel, Indiana. And I think things will be better. Michelle go to a new school. That's what you want anyway for her. You want her to go to a better school. I promise I won't drink so much. I promise I won't drink so much. I promise things will be better. And you know, I wanted to believe his promises. I really, truly did. And all this time, I want you to realize this, that the arguments and the violence didn't stop. This disease progressed. And in this sick thinking, I'm saying to myself, I can do this deal. I don't need anybody to do this deal. I can do it myself. My mother, my father didn't help me. You know, look at the kind of life. I wasn't happy there. I am going to be happy. I can't leave Mike and go back home because my mother will say, I told you so. And I'm not going to give her credit that she told me so. This is my responsibility. This is the wife's responsibility. It had to be my fault. I wasn't doing something right. So we moved to Westfield, Indiana. Brand new house, brand new school, brand new neighborhood. Everything's great. Everything's great, I think. Because for a while, things are great. Mike gets his ducks in a row, and things are just so smooth. They couldn't be any better. But then again, you know, he feels he has to stay a little bit later, and he has to go out for that drink. I asked him one night, I said, and I guess this is a moment of clarity for me. I asked him one night, I said, Mike, from our old neighborhood, one of Michelle's friends would like to come and visit Michelle. We'd like to have her to come over, come on up to the house and spend the night. Maybe we could go out for pizza. And I'd like for you to come home sober. Now, Mike's going to tell a little bit of that story when you hear him this evening. But I didn't realize, and if you think about it, think about the question that I ask. I'd like for you to come home sober. Do you think you could come home sober? I got off work and got home about 5 o'clock, and Michelle's friend Elkie was going to be at our house probably about that time. And I can't remember if I was supposed to pick her up or if they were going to drop her off. But Elkie showed up, and Michelle, and we were all cleaned up and dressed up, and we were waiting for Mike, and we were waiting for Mike, and we were waiting for Mike, and he didn't show up. Sick thinking takes over. You know, many a times I would pray that something would happen, that he would get hurt, or that he would get killed, because then the pain would stop. The problem would be gone. The problem would be gone. So what do you think I did? I put that two little nine-year-old girls in the car with me, and I started driving around the north side of Indianapolis, going to every bar that I knew Mike would frequent, because I thought, how dare him break another promise? How dare him disappoint me one more time? How dare him do this to Michelle one more time? Well, and I saw his car. I locked the car door, left these two girls in the parking lot of this bar. You know you get in trouble, you'd be arrested today. I was so obsessed. See, my problem was not alcohol. I was so obsessed with the alcoholic. My focus was on that alcoholic, was on that bottle. It wasn't on me, and it wasn't on our daughter. I just didn't know how to live life at all, on life's terms. It was phase terms. Man, and can't you just see the young me stomping up those steps? Can't you just going in that bar, and I make sure he sees me, and then I turn my tail, and I go back to the car, and I go home. The point was to let him know that I saw him, and I knew where he was. I get the girls back home. Mike rolls in. I can't tell you what time it was, but he comes in, and he doesn't have his shirt on. And I said, oh, I was so angry. I was so angry. And Michelle and Elkie are in the bedroom, and of course they look down the hall, and immediately Michelle is so hurt, and so she shuts the door. You know, she wants to protect herself from this little girl, but they had already seen Mike. And I simply said, in my sarcastic way, where is your shirt? where is your shirt? He didn't know where his shirt was. We're starting the whole thing all over again in a new neighborhood. Now we're, again, same, repeating the same pattern. Now in this nice neighborhood, these police, these Westfield police, do they come quietly in the night? No. They roar up in the middle of the street. It's like a SWAT team. Lights are blaring, come in, drive in the driveway, drive in the yard, block the street. Like, and then now you got the neighbors out on their porches. They don't know about us, right? But boy, can you just imagine what they're thinking? And I thought to myself, I can't do this. And here was this moment of clarity that I had. This police officer evidently had been there before, and I can't, you know, after a while, just as a blur. He comes in the house, and he stands in the living room, and the difference is, you know what, he's looking at me. He's looking at me, and he says, lady, you are just as responsible as he is, because look what you are doing to her. And he points to the love seat where Michelle lies, and she's curled up in a fetal position. She is absolutely sobbing her eyes out. Because you see, she saw her mother and her father at the worst, our very, very worst. She would get her little body between us because she was sick and tired of seeing her mommy and daddy beat each other up. Now, she can't get between us. This disease is progressive. She storms out of the house across the street to the neighbors, and she calls the police. Time and time and time again. And that officer, again, you know what I'm thinking, he has the gall to tell me. But here's what happened. He was right. It dawned on me after 16 years. You remember I told you how that you can do this thing over and over and over again? Al-Anon has a piece of literature called Merry-Go-Round called Denial, Act 2. You can live, we, family members, friends, relatives, can live that act for the rest of our life. For the rest of our life, do absolutely nothing. And you continue to do what you want to do. And it dawned on me that police officer was right. Oh my God, I do have a responsibility. How can I do what I've been doing? And I thought, like with my mother, like with my father, they're the problem, right? You get rid of the problem. Who's the problem? Mike's the problem. You get rid of the problem. It's Mike. So I filed for divorce. I got a restraining order. I got the locks changed on the doors. I got the little tumbler in the garage door changed. That's it. I'm done. I've had it. I don't like you. I don't like the smell of you. I don't like the touch. I can't even stand to look at you. I hate you. Don't you see? I hate you. And Michael would look at me and say, but you don't hate me. You love me. How can I don't love you? And we were separated for several weeks. The next time I saw Mike, it was in front of the judge in Noblesville, Indiana, at the courthouse. And there was something different about Mike, something that I had never seen before. I really couldn't put my finger on it, but here's what went through my mind. First of all, his eyes were clear. They weren't bloodshot. Second of all, he had a spring in his step, if you will, a sense of energy about him. And when he smiled and when he kind of laughed, it was not fake, it was from the gut. And I remember a few weeks before our meeting, he would call me at work. By this time, each time I got a job, I would better myself so I could take care of Michelle and myself. And he called me at work. And he said, you know, I went to the assistance program at work. And he sent me to Alcoholics, he said A&A. And I said, well, I really can't say from here what I said to him. But in terms that you understand, I said, I don't care about this A&A. I don't care what you've done. You're not coming home. I'll see ya. Click. So you see, when I saw him then, he said Faye, I've been going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been going to AA. I want to come home. No, you can't. It's over. You can't come home. You can't come home. So we went our separate ways. And his Aunt Peggy, bless her little heart, she died not too long ago. She came to Mike's defense, and she said, Faye, she called me. Always had all these people now calling me, and it always seems it was always about Mike. It was never about me. Never what I went through, right? It's Mike this, Mike that. She says, Faye, I'm worried about Mike. You see, he's down on the east side of town, and now he's living with a bunch of his drug-drinking buddies, and I'm worried about him, and he's getting help, and he's doing what you want him to do. Why don't you let him come back home? Keep in mind, I've not done a thing about me. I don't have a problem. There's nothing wrong with me. But I felt guilty, because I felt a lot of guilt. Growing up, remember all those character defects that I had? I didn't know they were character defects, right? I didn't know about the anger, the fear, the resentment that all leads to self-pity. I didn't know about those feelings. So what I did as a child is I stuffed them. Then I acted all those things out. So what did I still have those feelings. And I also have very low self-esteem, which it probably is zero, because Michael would say to me, you know, if a preacher was married to you, you'd drive him to drink. I thought that was true. I started believing the things that he would tell me, that it was my fault. Well, I felt guilty, and I called him up. I said, Mike, would you like to come home? And he said, oh, yeah, I'd like to come home. So he comes home, and I said, but remember, the divorce proceedings are still going forward. So blankety blank blank, or you're out on the street. Really, I said, I'll kick your smelly ass out of here. And a few other little adjectives. So I was watching Mike just like before, right? I'm watching. I'm controlling, and I'm saying this A&A not going to work. He started going to all these A&A meetings, and he started talking about these steps, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear this stuff. And I said to him, I said, Michael, there is absolutely no difference between you going to this A&A and you going to the bar, because you know why? You're not at home. You're not at home. You're doing the same thing, you're just not drinking. And I knew without a doubt there was a good-looking chick like Christy in those rooms. That's why he was going to this A&A. Fear. Fear. And if you laugh about this, don't think for one moment there aren't unhealthy men and women in those programs. Don't think that there isn't 13-stepping. I've learned that. So what I say to young ladies who hug him a little too long is I simply say, you don't have to hug and linger too long. Anyway, he's going to these A&A meetings, and I'm so angry. God, I'm so pissed. Moment of desperation, if you will. I didn't get to Al-Anon, and I don't know about any of you. I didn't get to Al-Anon by raising my hand and saying, oh, I want to go. That's not what happened. One Wednesday night, I knew that Mike had started drinking again. And he says to me, he said, I'm not drinking. And I said, yes, you are drinking. He said, no, I'm not. I said, Mike, you are. Well, how do you know I'm drinking? He said, how do you know I'm drinking? And I said, and this was long before I read the term Dr. Jekyll Hyde or Jekyll Hyde in the big book. I said, Mike, we're having a conversation in the kitchen. I thought it was going real well. You walk down the hallway, in a matter of seconds, you're back in that kitchen and you're in my face. It's like a Jekyll Hyde. You're mean. When you're not drinking, you're not that way. I know you're drinking. No, I'm not. I said, I can't find the booze, but I know you're drinking. And this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. And you know, he was going to these ANA meetings. Still going to these ANA meetings. One night, I get up, and it's, I think it's either Christmas Day or Christmas Eve. I can't remember. I want to say the 26th of December, but I'm not sure. Anyway, I get up, and I see the bathroom door shut. Now, I don't know why the door shut, but I push it open really hard, and I hit his head. And there Mike is, passed out on the floor. Mike says that I said this, and briefly I recall, but not as well as he does, which I'll let him tell you, but I recall this. I look down at him. I remember looking down at him. And he says that I said to him, "You know what you got to do." And we start this whole gamut again. He's starting to, because you see what happened? He stopped going to AA. And I thought, you know, things were going to change. He started going back to AA. And I didn't like it. Because, see, again, nothing's really changing. And I just knew I was right. I just knew. I said, "See, I told you. But you know what you got to do." This particular Wednesday night, I was angry. And here's why I was angry. Again, I was becoming more and more angry. More and more angry within myself. He says, "I'm going to the Wednesday night meeting at 86th and Ditch Road." And I remember him going to this meeting because it was this 12-step meeting that he would go to. And he would share some of these things with me. And I would hear, but I didn't want him to know that I heard. And I said, "No, you're not going." He said, "Yes, I am." And I said, "Mike, you're not going to this meeting. Have you ever, ever been so angry that in front of you see red? I mean, you just don't see the person." But what I saw was something kept flying out. And I'll tell you what that was. Have you ever heard the phrase foaming at the mouth? I had this white spit. Sounds very unladylike, doesn't it? I don't look the way now that I look then, let me assure you. And this spit was flying. I was in front of the door, the service door, because he wasn't going to leave. I wasn't going to let him leave. Michael very gently pushed me aside. Notice I said gently, no violence. Hadn't had any violence for some 9 months, 12 months. Gently pushed me aside and said, "Faye, I got to go because this means my life. You see, I have to put..." I have to put AA first before you and before Michelle because it means my life. And I'm insane because he walks out. I hear that garage door go up. I hear the garage door go down. And I am angry. I am so angry. And I look up at the kitchen ceiling. And I said, "Oh God. Oh God, will you help me? Please help me because I am going crazy. Absolutely going crazy." Isn't it amazing the prayers that God hears? I didn't feel that he heard the prayers that I said when I was a scared kid on my knees. God heard this prayer. And the reason he heard the prayer is because there was a calmness that came over me. A calmness that I realized Mike was in such a hurry to get out of the house that he forgot to take his big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. If I was crazy and not calmed, how would I would have realized that? I didn't go near that book. I didn't want anything to do with your literature. But I realized that. I walked down the hallway. I turned to the right, and there it was in the bookcase. I thought to myself, if this book helps him, there's got to be something in there for me. I opened the book, looked in the table of contents, and what do you think I found? Chapter 8, to the wives. I took the book down, I looked, I read it, and by the time I was in the second paragraph, there was a calmness that came over me I had never felt. You ought to read that chapter whether you're a wife or not. You ought to read that book whether you are an alcoholic or not. It's not conference-approved literature. It's not a piece of Al-Anon conference-approved literature. But I suggest you read it. At the end of that chapter, what do you think I read? Remember the 4 years prior? Remember the man who said, Faye, if you want help for yourself, you go to Al-Anon? There's the message. Oh, my God, right there it is. You know what it says in that chapter? You should go along on a spiritual plane with your husband. A what? I didn't know a thing about spiritual plane. It says also in there, if your husband senses fear or intolerance, if your husband senses fear or intolerance, it may lessen his recovery. What had I been doing? I will never, ever take the responsibility of either Mike picking up a drink or any other alcoholic picking up a drink. But here's what I realized. I did not help the family disease. So maybe, in a sense, I lessened. Maybe. I don't know, but maybe. Because, see, I was so full of fear and didn't know it. Me, afraid? No. That's a weakness. Me, intolerable? Why, well, you would be intolerant too if you were married to somebody like I was married to. It was either that Friday night or the next Friday night I was in my very, very first Al-Anon meeting. Did I want to be there? No. No, I really didn't. I didn't know a thing about Al-Anon. I didn't know a thing about an alcoholic. I remember when I went to the attorney to file for divorce and I told him my story and why. You know what he said? Do you think your husband's alcoholic? Well, no, he's not alcoholic. He just drinks too much, and he knows it gets to me, but I'm going to get to him first. That's the kind of attitude that I had. A lot of smiles in those rooms, a little bit of laughter in those rooms. I didn't know how to smile. I didn't know how to laugh. I was serious. I was so serious. A buck in a basket? Come on. A buck in a basket? It's not going to work. This isn't going to work. But I continued to go because here's what I heard. I heard you share how you felt, your feelings, your fear, your anger, your resentment, and how these steps helped. Now, I didn't know at the time that I was in a very unhealthy Al-Anon meeting. God was good to me. And I was pissed off at God. So I, you know, when they talked about this higher power, because it took me back to when I went to church, took me back to that punishing God that I was afraid of. And I thought, oh, this is a cult. This is what this is. This is what Al-Anon is. It's a cult. But something kept drawing me back, and it was because you shared how you felt. You said to me, keep coming back. Oh, don't you hate that phrase? Keep coming back. It'll get better. Keep coming back. You'll learn. And then they talked about this sponsorship. Sponsor. You need to get a sponsor. You think I'm going to trust a woman? You think I'm going to trust a skirt who will, every time they wanted something from me, every time I felt that a woman took something, wanted something, I didn't trust skirt. I didn't trust females. I'm not getting a sponsor. Here's what I tell you that will happen, I guarantee you. There is enough, if you go to enough Al-Anon meetings, you're going to hear what you need to hear. I was in a 12-step workshop meeting. Just curiosity. You know, I'm not really gonna be a part of. I didn't purchase the only daily reader we had at the time when I came in 1982 was One Day at a Time, the Blue Book. That was the only daily reader that we had. I'm not buying your literature. I'm not gonna be a part of. So this one lady said during this workshop, you don't have to work the fourth and fifth step if you choose not to.
because that's a step I'm not going to work. You can work the steps you feel comfortable with. Oh, well, I'll go right to the 12th step. When you think about our 12th step and you think about the message that we have in Al-Anon, think about that 12th step. What does it say? Having had. Does it say perhaps you will have? Could have? Maybe you will have? No. It says having had. That's a promise. That's a promise. There could be somebody here sitting in this room that perhaps you don't feel worthy enough to be a part of this program or worthy enough for your higher power to love you. Let me tell you, you stick around long enough. I promise you that that 12th step will be fulfilled in your life. I thought, oh man, this is great. I don't have to work that fourth and fifth step. And I was smiling, and man, I was... So this gal grabbed me by the arm as I was leaving the workshop, and she said, Faye, I'm going to tell you something. If you don't get busy, and you don't get a sponsor, and you don't work those steps, you're going to go right back to being miserable. And I remember reading a quote in Lois Remembers from Bill. An alcoholic doesn't stop drinking, but he grows away from drinking. And he will grow away from his spouse, too, if she does not find a program of recovery. See, one of the things I feared and didn't even know it was abandonment. I didn't even know it. But that was one of my fears. And I could already tell that Michael was growing. He was happy. I was not happy. Took me 18 months before I really got it. And what I mean got it, when I had already laid the basics of the first step, the second step, and the third step. See, that first step, yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol, I'll give you that. Yeah, my life is unmanageable. Or why in the world would I be sitting here with all of you? Came to believe. It's a gradual process, Faye. It takes time. It's a gradual process to learn, to change your old habits, those things that you find objectionable in you. And in that third step, allowing God to love me, allowing God to care for me. I didn't allow anybody to care for me. Thank you, I'll take care of myself. I can take care of you, though. I can do real good about taking care of you and telling you what's good for you. It's amazing how many people would come to me and say, I got this problem and I had a solution for them, but there was nothing wrong with me. Well, I did get a sponsor, you know, and we didn't have, I think we did, Al-Anon had, along with our One Day at a Time, we had a green and white book, which we still have, still being printed. It's our 12 and 12. Now, I don't care much for the four-step story and our 12 steps and 12 traditions of Al-Anon. But one thing I do remember, and it sticks with me, because, God, it was so true, and it was like, man, it just hit me, and it was the fourth step, second page, you come down, and I think it's maybe the third paragraph. It tells me that I would have had difficulty living life under any circumstances, whether I was married to an alcoholic or not. Why do you think that is? Remember the feelings of how I felt when I was a child? Already my life was unmanageable. I took myself with me when I left my home as a child, not knowing how to live life. I took those feelings of inadequacy with me when I married Mike. Maybe that's why those personalities were attracted to one another. I don't know. But for Mike and I, we meshed our sicknesses. We meshed very well. And I thought that Mike was the problem, but it tells me right there. I would have had difficulty living life on any terms, no matter. And I did. And the sponsor of mine, she said, Faye, I want you to get, and I was sponsored out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because then Al-Anon did not have a good textbook, a good study book on how to do this deal. So she took me, she said, Faye, I want you to read Chapter 5 of How It Works in the big book. And I want you to start writing about your fear, about your resentment, about your anger, and how that affected your sexuality. Now, I liked, we came out with, Al Anon printed a little a pamphlet, was bigger than that. It's a booklet, and it was called Blueprint for Progress. Now, I tell you why I like that. Yes, no, maybe, question mark. You're not going to find out about me. I'm not going to share. Yes, no. She said, oh, no, 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 no. You put that up on the shelf. We're not doing it that way. We're not going to do, if you want to do that sometime up the road in your spare time, fine. We're not doing it that way. And you're to call me every week, and we set up a certain time. And she said, Faye, when you get angry, you call me. You don't want to get angry at Mike. You take the focus off of Mike. Imagine that written on his forehead is mind your own business. In chapter 8, the wives, it says, let him go. Absolutely let your husband go. Well, who's going to watch him if I let him go? Let him feel completely free. Well, my God, if I let him feel completely free, it's not going to work. See, that's the whole purpose. I didn't know it. That's the whole purpose. If an alcoholic really wants what AA has to offer, they're going to want it on their own, not because they're doing it for their wife, their girlfriend, their lover, whoever. I didn't know that. The focus, Faye, is now on you. We're going to get busy on you. You are under new management. You didn't do such a good job with yourself. For 36 years, you didn't do too good. So you're under new management. You're under my management. You didn't get sick in these rooms. You got sick at home, girl. You're taking this program at home. When you see Mike come down the hallway, I want you to hug him. I don't want to hug him. Well, I don't care if you want to hug him or not. You're going to hug him. So I would see him. Now, this is a strange thing. We had a little house in Westfield, 1,300 square feet, something like that. But what was so nice is that you could walk out of the utility room and make a complete circle and not see the person, and it was just Mike. So that's what I would do. She'd tell me what to do. I won't have to do it. Well, you know, eventually that. So I would give him half hugs. He told me to read a booklet called Living with Sobriety, which we still print. It talks about communication. It talks about sexuality. It talks about intimacy. Into me, I see. Into me, I see. You see, when I married Mike, we're full of lust. A lot of chemistry, right? Well, as you get older, you kind of lose some of that, but none of you would know anything about that. So you learn to change your whole being, Faye, the whole way you live life. You're living life on different terms. You're living a spiritual life. These are spiritual principles. You're going to put these spiritual principles in your life. And that's what I started doing. You know, I recovered first. I recovered through sponsorship, the steps, prayer. I didn't know how to pray. That communication, but I learned how to do that in the first three steps. That laid the foundation of that relationship that I would have with a power greater than me, who I choose to call God today. When I first started, my sponsor said, she said, will you believe because I believe? I said, I can do that. She said, could you use the group as your higher power? I could do that. As long as it's not you, Faye, that's all that matters. And gradually, I built up a relationship with a God. My friend today. I can have a conversation with God, and if I'm pissed off, I'm telling you, God knows it. But it's better being pissed off and having that conversation with God instead of saying, Mike, it's your fault. Or it's your fault. Or it's the driver who pulled in front of me, an Al-Anon member might see me do this. Well, is that how I've learned to live my life? No. Absolutely not. Or this, you know? But I want to do that. That's normal. You see, these steps in my life, the traditions in my life, the concepts of service, that's not normal. So I know there's a reason that I remember where I came from. There's a reason that all of you remember where you came from so that you can be there for that new person. There's a reason why we don't forget. There's a reason why I don't forget. Because if I forgot, I would become complacent and I would leave these rooms, which I almost did. I got my priorities all messed up. I got a promotion at work, and I started working overtime, and I won. You see, things, when you start putting principles in front of you, spiritual principles, things start, man, things are wonderful, aren't they? Wonderful. So I really worked hard, and the girls I respond say, Faye, you know what? I didn't see you at the meeting last night, or Faye, you came in late, and then you left in a hurry. And next thing, I was feeling uncomfortable, and I was feeling like, well, I don't need to go to my home group. They're doing fine. The girls I sponsor, they're sponsoring girls. They're not going to miss me. Sick thinking. See how fast that happened before I realized it. Priorities. I wasn't putting the program first in my life. See, I got busy. Things got better. I wasn't putting service work in my life. My sponsor said, Faye, I'm going to tell you something. You come in these rooms, you get healthy, you get to feeling better, you have a responsibility. That responsibility is that you are there for that new person, that new gal that comes in that door, just like you did. You have a responsibility to reach out to her. If I'm busy with a promotion, trying to get a better job, to get paid more, to buy more, and is that? No, that's not what my higher power wants me to do at all. So when I started putting everything in my life that it's great, my life was great. Unity. Learn about unity through service, through the traditions. You know, we don't just apply these steps and traditions in the meeting rooms. You know, we're all on our very best behavior. We're good. But when we go home, we're back living life on life's terms. Faye, you take these traditions at home. You apply these traditions to your home. Got myself involved in tradition workshops. How do you do that? How do you do that? You get involved in service work, you have workshops. If you don't know how to do it, you communicate, you educate, you learn. And when you learn, what do you do with that? Do you keep it to yourself? No. You pass it on to the girls you sponsor. You pass it on to your home group. You pass it on to your district so they know how. Service work. Service work through writing articles. Put them in the forum. Service work, just show up, Faye. Show up. I want you to chair the meeting. Oh, I can't chair the meeting. I won't do it right. You can show up and chair the meeting because I promise you, I'll sit right next to you. I'll show it. I'll show you how it's to be done. That's our responsibility. That's my responsibility. Amazing. Started doing the little simple things. Show up early. Set up the chairs. Lay out the literature. I'm never, ever too good to do that. Remember where I came from. I am still just as active in Al-Anon as I was when I lived up and the meetings were 10 minutes away. Now the meetings are 45 minutes away. I have a responsibility to carry this message. I'm a little concerned. I told you that I was had a great privilege. Well, first of all, being very active in my group, then as district rep. And then I was very active at our area level. When you go to area assembly, that's your business meeting. Very active in that. If you think that's boring, I'm going to tell you something. You need to listen what goes on in your business meetings. You need to be aware of our World Service Office. Why do I say that? The reason I say that is because I am very concerned as being a past delegate of what we're doing at our World Service Office. I don't know where this tape goes. Sometimes I'm concerned where the tape goes. You know, I hope it's not posted on the internet with my face, you know? But this will not matter if this even gets back to the World Service Office, because I want you to know I love the privilege and the honor that I had as being delegate. I wouldn't have changed that for a moment, not for a moment. And I believe in my heart of hearts that our executive director at our World Service Office and that our Board of Trustees, they feel that what they are doing for World Service Al-Anon, that is worldwide Al-Anon, is right. I am not so sure that what they are doing is right. Find out who your current delegate is. Talk to your current delegate, because that's where you're going to have to change it. The delegates go to the conference and say, as I did, because I was of the minority, and it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to be at the minority, of the minority at the World Service Office Conference at the mic. Your knees are shaking, your voice is quivering. You want people to like you, and you know that what you're going to say, they may not like you. It doesn't matter if they like you or not, because this You see, we're not here to have a tea party. And please, I don't want to sound preachy. I guess it's because I wasn't sure how I would be moved to share with you. But if we don't protect what we have, we're going to lose it. We are not a business. Our current delegate from Indiana heard our executive director say that the office is being run like a business. We are not a business, okay? We are in the business of saving lives, okay? That's our business. We are not in the business of making money. I don't want us to lose our history. You see, I'm getting older, and I'm not going to be here forever, so the girls I sponsor, that's how I talk to the girls I sponsor. Because you see, it's going to be up to those girls and you, the girls you sponsor, and your delegate to protect what we have. And if we don't protect it, we're going to lose it. Because what we lose the history. We lose the history of Lois Wilson and Ann Bingham. Because Lois Wilson and Ann Bingham knew when Lois was asked by Bill to write to the 87 families who loved what AA had done for their loved ones, it wasn't a business at all. That was not their journey, that was not their goal. It was so that they would have a program of recovery. I believe this, as long as I show up, as long as I keep showing up, wherever, and you keep showing up, we are going to be here for whom? The new person who's been affected by alcoholism. We're going to have a program of recovery, a program of hope, a new way to live life on life's terms. Thank you.